Produced by Women About Women, Powerful Women Let's Talk is a series of interviews with women who are trailblazers and have helped shape our world, transforming who we are and how we live. Powerful Women Let's Talk is made possible in part by Family Fair, keeping it real.
Beth Fisher is an author, speaker, business leader, cancer survivor, and marathoner with a passion for helping others overcome. Spending over 25 years in corporate sales, today she follows a calling, Vice President of Communications and Advancement for Mel Trotter Ministries. Her books are out as well. Let's talk about that and, well, also about how fast she runs. Welcome to our Powerful Women Let's Talk conversation, Beth Fisher.
Hi, Shelley. Thanks for having me.
How fast do you run?
It depends on the day, right? And right now, after last year in the pandemic, where my training has completely plummeted, not so fast at all, it turns out.
Yes. Stand by. We'll talk about running because we know it's part of you. We need to talk about the many hats you wear thus far in life. What brought you to Grand Rapids, knowing that you aren't a native?
Yeah, so funny story. I am a Midwesterner at heart. I grew up in Ohio, very small town, a village in Northeast Ohio. And then I was in Indiana, in Fort Wayne, Indiana, for about 19 years. And what brought me here to West Michigan is the fact that I did what I said I was never going to do again and got remarried. So my husband has been in Grand Rapids for about 20 years, and as part of the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, I was doing some volunteer work for them, and part of a campaign that I was running, I met him through that. My now sister-in-law, his sister-in-law at the time, was a part of that in Fort Wayne. So I lived like a mile away from my mother-in-law, my brother-in-law, my sister-in-law in Fort Wayne, and my husband Ryan came to Fort Wayne once and met him, and I began dating him and said, you know, after he asked me to marry him, I'm like, yes, I will marry you. However, I'm going to stay in Indiana and you can stay in Michigan and we'll just like make that work because I'm super independent and was fearful of getting married again. But very thankful I ended up actually liking him. You know, what a concept. And am now here and been here for 4 years.
But does he know that you never wanted to get married?
Oh, yeah, I was pretty clear about that.
Nice. I want to get into somewhat of, I think, maybe the elephant in the room. You working, volunteering for the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. Was there a personal reason?
Definitely, yeah. So when I was 25, I had just turned 25 and was diagnosed with leukemia. I couldn't even spell leukemia, didn't know what it was. I was in the middle of a divorce. I married my daughter's dad right out of college. I'm a very type A checklist kind of girl. And I thought, well, circa 1995, what do you do next, right? You get married. That's the thing. I'm like, well, okay, we're together. I guess this is the guy I married. Not a lot of forethought in that. So he and I were married young. And my daughter, who's almost 24, was born when I was 23. So don't do all the math. But yeah, we were married. And then he moved us to Indiana. That's how I got from Ohio to Indiana. Mm-hmm. He took a job there. And then he went back to Ohio without us. I thought, I got this. I can do this on my own. So in the midst of all that, when I was picking up those impending pieces, that's when I just, you know, thought I had a cold, thought I was losing weight because of the stress of a divorce. Went to the doctor. And the next day they called and said, yeah, this is not looking good. So again, had no experience with cancer, had no familial history. The first question I asked the doctor was, is this hereditary? Because I just thought of Olivia, who was not quite 2 years old. And they said no. And so I did a lot of research. It's environmental, looking back. We can get to that in a second. But yeah, I had a bone marrow transplant when I was 25. I was not supposed to live. They said, this is your own, there's no cure. I said, what do I do? You know, I don't want this. How do I, Olivia is a baby. I want her to grow up with a mom, not without a mom. What are my options here? And they said, there is no cure. The only thing you can try is a bone marrow transplant, but sort of parenthetically, good luck, because not a lot of people make it out of that. And sure enough, I was in for 35 days, University Hospitals of Cleveland, the Ireland Cancer Center, and I was the only person who walked out of there alive. You know, it did a lot for my worldview, but what's interesting is not at the time I went through it. It's more now been in retrospect, obviously. You know, I think that that's why I have such a passion for not only helping people through adversity, but just for understanding who they are and not going through a lot of guilt for responding or not responding in an expected way. You know, one of the very first things people asked me when I left the hospital, I mean, I would say a couple days after, you know, I'm bald. Mm-hmm. I am exhausted. I'm mentally, physically just sort of, you know, at my wit's end, but hanging on. And people ask me, are you so close to God now? You know, do you stop and smell the roses? And I'm like, I don't know the protocol here. Like, I haven't been through this before.
Yeah.
What am I supposed to be doing? I'm just trying to go home and you know, resume life and be a mom and, you know, go to the bank and go to the dry cleaner and cook an actual meal, like get back into the swing of life. So many things that I think oftentimes we take for granted, not purposely, but man, when you don't have those things, mm-hmm. as we all know, coming out of last year, it's interesting mm-hmm. how people deal with that.
Yes. Did they ever discover the whys of your diagnosis?
So I think in theory they did. And I, like I mentioned, you know me well, I don't sit still very, very often, even when I'm cooped up in a hospital room
I'm
for 35 days.
I'm keeping you here
days.
For another 10 minutes. Okay.
Okay. All right. I'm sitting still. But I did an infinite amount of research, one, just to keep my mind busy, but two, I always want to know the why for everything. And so I thought, where did this come from? I think it was more like an Aaron Brockovich story, environmental. I grew up, I was a four-season athlete. I played sports my whole life. And again, very small town in Northeast Ohio, little village. And I don't think the water source was super safe. So I think, well, in my case, what happened is two genes kind of switch, chromosomes like 9 and 21 switch at some point in childhood. And then something triggers that in, you know, in life. And for me, it was the stress of a divorce. It was just the incredible amount of stress that I had going through that that triggered what had been dormant in my system. But I think it was the water. You know, I was like the girl that would ride the bike out, you know, through the cemetery, race the boys, do the dirt bikes, play basketball. Everything that there was something to do outside, I was out there.
You can still do that, you know.
I do.
Yes.
Yes, I do.
Thank you for that journey, that mm-hmm. healthcare journey. But you've also had a journey from the corporate world to the nonprofit world. Give me that summary, Beth.
Yeah. So 25 years in corporate sales. I would go into organizations, industry agnostic, all sorts of industries, sizes, shapes, locations, number of people. I just love people and I love business process. I have a pretty high business acumen and love for just what goes on in an organization. And I did that for 25 years, loved every minute of it. However, the older I got and the, you know, again, that retrospect and the experiential knowledge, especially coming from transplant, I thought, well, like, kind of what's the point? Not of the job itself, but of life, right? And so I knew that I loved people, but I knew also that I wanted to do more. And so when I moved to Grand Rapids, I said to my husband, okay, yes, I'll do this. I can still maintain that job. I can work remotely. But when I get there, here are the two things I need: a running community. Mm-hmm. And I need a place where I can give back and help people understand that they matter. And I need those things not in that order. So I went right to Mel Trotter Ministries. And as part of my journey, my faith journey, I grew up Catholic. I tell people, you know, I'm Irish and Italian. I didn't really have a choice in the matter. I was like going to be Catholic growing up, right? And I really thought that I got cancer because of my divorce. That was my theology at the time. I thought that God was punishing me for doing something that, you know, thou shall not get divorced. That's all I heard. As you know, when you have an achiever mentality and sort of are always striving and always want to, you know, get the A and crush the goals, it's really hard to listen to instruction, because I'm a lifelong learner as well, and not feel instantly guilty or anxious or remorseful if you mess up, right? So my Catholicism, while it was very sentimental to me, and I still hold a lot of that with high regard, it was also the teacher for me that made me think, wow, I messed this up and I'm kind of like out, right? Catholicism has this purgatory in between thing, which is not good for anybody who likes to arrive someplace one way or another. I wanted to know, getting stuck is never good for me. But I just ultimately thought there's got to be more. So I went back to school. I got a couple master's degrees in theology, began to teach. And as part of that, when I moved to West Michigan, I fell in love with Mel Trotter Ministries. And I just started to volunteer there. I was teaching devotions. I was teaching people who society had sort of taught were meaningless, or at least that's the story and the narrative that they have heard repetitively throughout their lives. And I thought, I'm just going to show up here and hang out. Like, I'm just going to show up here and talk about what faith means to me, not in the, like, let me just tell you the one way, because my experience has been that's like more of a turn off than a come, let's learn more together.
You actually say you learn by teaching. What does this mean?
Yeah, I think that, you know, I'm a big believer that we all know who we are from a very young age, and that societal pressures and social constructs and the world kind of gets us off of our track. I've always known that I have a gift for gab, right? I love to talk. I love people. I love to think about ideas and just really get down to the whys of things. And for me, teaching is the best environment to question, to say to a room full of other questioners who are trying to get through this journey of life. You know, we're all on it. And so I will say, well, what's been your experience? Teach me what you've learned And then there's the reciprocity in that. I really, you know, in the preparation, if there's a curriculum, that obviously I learn through that. But more so just being around people, hearing their stories, and then sharing mine. To me, that's the beauty of life.
And where do you find time to write a book or two?
Well, that was actually part of the journey, too, from my former career and employer to Mel Trotter, is that I went to them after 23 years and said, you know, I'd like a sabbatical because this book thing has really been weighing on me for a long time. And my daughter graduated from IU, and I've learned more from her than I'm sure I've taught her. And she said to me, Mom, I'm going to move to Grand Rapids after I graduate, you know, if you're okay with that. And, you know, she likes me again, so I was definitely okay with it. Teenage years were a whole other story.
Yeah, good, you're normal.
Yeah, yeah. But she came back and she said, I'd like to hang out and live and kind of before I go on to my graduate work. And she said, why don't you take like a break from your job? It's probably the last time we'll ever live together and you could write your book. So I was like, well, that's kind of a genius idea. But at first I was completely, you know, I pushed back and I said, this can't happen. I've been working since I've been 14 years old. What do you mean take a break? But I went to my boss at the time and I said, what do you think about this? And he said, well, how long would you like? And I didn't even contemplate that because I had never written a book before. I thought, well, how long? So I don't know, 9 months. I think I just equated that to like having a baby, the gestation period. I had no clue. I said, I don't know, 9 months sounds good.
Did it take you nine months?
No, it took me like two.
There you go.
And then I got bored, right? Because I was like, well, then what? And so I was actually at a leadership conference here in Grand Rapids. And that's when I saw my buddies from Mel Trotter. I'd known them for 3 years of volunteering. And they said, hey, like, what's the scoop with the book? And what are you doing? And I'm like, well, you know, it's done. I'm waiting for it to go to publication. And in the meantime, I don't know. I'm just kind of taking it every day, putting one foot in front of the other and kind of seeing where these doors may or may not open. And they said, do you know how to raise money? And I'm like, well, yeah, you guys have been doing it for 25 years. Yeah, why? She goes, send me your resume. This is like the HR. And I said, okay, on the way. And it was interesting. Like my stomach sank like I was a seventh grade girl to dance. I did not have any intention whatsoever of changing careers, changing employers. You know, I just didn't even cross my mind. And that's, I think, why I'm so always interested in saying to people, don't give up. Don't give up because you have no idea what awaits you and what's around the corner if you just are open to the possibilities.
Yes. What does make you laugh?
Oh, really off-color humor.
We'll change the subject right away.
You know,
that,
but like sardonic sarcasm, you know, unexpected makes me laugh.
Yeah, nice. And tell me about your running career.
Yeah. So as I mentioned, I grew up playing sports. I ran track. I ran cross country back in the day. And then, you know, went to college and became a mom and went through the cancer. So I was not running in my 20s. And then when Olivia, my daughter, turned, I don't know, maybe 13 or so, I thought, I'm going to have to figure out something to get through these teenage parenting years. So I went to the Y to work out and I saw just an advertisement like, hey, if you ever want to run a half marathon, sign up for the program. I thought, well, all right, that sounds cool. And it was the Indy half marathon. And so then once I started to research it and realized that, okay, under 2 hours is like the goal. I'm like, I'm going to do this thing. And so never had any intention of becoming a marathoner. I thought like this was one and done, but man, it gets in your blood. And then as a competitive person anyway, I ran in Indianapolis and that was in 2008. And I have never stopped. I'm like Forrest Gump over here.
Yes. Well, once you've done Boston, I don't even know where you go from there, but congratulations on that. What do you define success? What does success mean to you?
Yeah, something very different at this point in my life than it did in my early 20s, right? And so I think, especially now as when I'm mom and impart wisdom, you know, when Olivia is open to hearing that, some of the things that I say to her are, you know, just be open. There is no arrival. Like, you know, when you always feel like you're chasing some sort of finish line or some sort of thing that you have to accomplish, you miss out on the process of it. And, you know, you asked me about Boston. I said, I don't want to go back because I like the 18 weeks of training much more than I like the 3+ hours or whatever it takes, depending on the day, when you're there on those nasty hills and the, you know, I like being in those continual moments. And I think if you're so fixated on a goal that you miss out on all the beauty of actually every day, right? The everyday living. So in my 20s, success was I'm going to have a bigger title, a better career. I'm going to make more money. I'm going to do all the things that typically kind of get into our early brains. And now to me, success is lifting other people up. You know, success is to say, how can I give back and how can I experience joy literally in every moment, as opposed to this thing up ahead that is really just nothing more than sort of a self-created goal, because that doesn't really bring you continual joy. It's like, okay, I did that thing. What's next? You know, that gets exhausting to live like that. So I'm all about bringing people alongside.
But yet I bet somebody's training for Boston and feeling that same feel.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite motto, which you might have already mentioned along our conversation journey, that does help you with your motivation, that might help me with my motivation?
Yeah, you know, and I realized this was not credited to him. I'm the girl, too, that had sticky notes, like everything, you know, Maya Angelou and Eleanor Roosevelt and RBG, you know, everybody that I could learn from who said inspiring things. I'm all about the quotes. But I think at the end of the day, for me, it's never, never, never give up. That's it. And I think Winston Churchill was given credit for that, even though I don't think he said it at the address. But yeah, like just don't stop, right? Never give up. And the other thing, too, I would say is that consistency is key and also contagious. I remind myself of that daily, that you don't just land somewhere on like day two. You got to keep showing up.
Tell me about your book journey. First of all, I need the title of the two you have thus far and just a little synopsis of what we find.
Yeah, sure. So my book was released March 3rd of last year. So, you know, this whole lifelong dream of writing a book. People have said for many years, you should write a book. You should write a book. And I think what happens is the spiritual gifting that you're given, whatever it is that is so close to you, is often the hardest thing to actually do. In my case, I kept busy doing everything but that. I would write newspaper articles and resumes and write every possible thing I could write other than the actual book I wanted to put out in the world. You know, it's very vulnerable to do that. So at any rate, I finally did it, and it came out March 3rd of last year. And I thought, well, if you're ever going to do this thing, why not on the onset of a pandemic, right? What better time could there be? So it's called Remorseless: Learning to Lose Labels, Expectations, and Assumptions Without Losing Yourself. And Remorseless, the definition is this: without guilt in spite of wrongdoing. So for me, again, as an achiever, as somebody who always wanted to continue to do more, and yet the negative self-talk that I allowed myself to creep in always told me that I had this underlying layer of guilt. Like, you could have done better. You could have done more. You should have. And a lot of that, too, I allowed to enter in from societal expectations. And for me, it had a religious bent. So again, growing up Catholic, I always heard the shame side of God and theology, as opposed to the, hey, the other part of this deal is that, like, you matter and you're loved and you're unique and you're forgiven, and don't get yourself stuck on this journey because of what somebody else who is equally as human is telling you. I didn't have a lot of the agency to kind of fight back. You know, I'm a little scrappy by nature, but I never really understood and fully believed and accepted that I was good enough based on how I was created. So Remorseless is the journey of saying, hey, these are the crazy decisions I made before I really knew that I mattered. These are things that I encountered, and this is now what I know. So I loved everything about the writing process, except the editing, because I had to edit out some words that were apparently.
Yes. Well, thank you.
Yes.
Love the title, Remorseless.
Thank you. I also have a companion workbook as well that I self-published just a couple months ago. I'm really proud of that as well. And kind of takes people on a coaching journey. You know, I do personal professional leadership coaching. So I incorporated that as well as tasks and just things to actionably remind people to show up and be who they were created to be.
Thank you for sharing your life, Beth Fisher.
Thanks for having me, Shelley.
And thank you for listening to this inspiring edition of Powerful Women Let's Talk. I'm Shelley Irwin.
Produced by women, about women. These powerful podcasts focus on powerful women and how their strength transforms who we are and how we live. Want to hear more Powerful Women Let's Talk? Get additional interviews at wgvu.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Please rate and subscribe. Powerful Women Let's Talk is made possible in part by Family Fair, keeping it real. It is produced by WGVU at the Meyer Public Broadcast Center at Grand Valley State University. The views and opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of WGVU, its underwriters, or Grand Valley State University.